If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The shepherd saw everything. Jose Inez Rodriguez was tending his flock near the Consolado River on the evening of January 13, 1908, when he heard a woman's scream, sharp, sudden, cut short. He looked up to see an elderly woman, her name was Antonia, being dragged toward the riverbank by a well-dressed man in a vest. The evening light was fading. The river ran brown and thick behind them. The man was 68 years old, but moved with practiced violence. Rodriguez stayed hidden behind his flock. He watched. Watched as the man pulled a knife from his vest pocket. The blade caught what little light remained. Watched as he slit Antonia's throat in one swift motion. The same way you'd kill livestock, precise and efficient. Watch as he dragged her body to the water's edge, her blood mixing with the industrial runoff and sewage that passed for a river in that part of Mexico City. Watched as the man washed his hands in the same polluted water, calm, methodical, like this was his routine. Later that afternoon, the Solorio sisters came to wash clothes at their usual spot along the river. They found the killer still there, washing blood from his arms and chest in the brown water. His elegant vest hung on a branch nearby. He saw them seeing him, made no move to hide. They knew immediately what they'd witnessed. Everyone in the neighborhood knew. The killer's name was Francisco Guerrero Perez. He was called El Chalequero, the vest maker, because of his trade and the elegant vests he always wore. 20 years earlier, he'd terrorized the same neighborhood, this same stretch of river. Bodies of women had appeared on these banks for 8 years straight. Everyone had known it was him. The washerwomen had whispered his name. The market vendors had warned their daughters. The prostitutes had shared his description. Everyone had been too afraid to act. In 1888, he'd finally been arrested, convicted, sentenced to death. That sentence was commuted to 20 years in one of Mexico's most notorious prisons. He served 16 years before being released in 1904, not because of good behavior or parole, but because of a bureaucratic error. Someone had filed his paperwork wrong, confused him with political prisoners receiving amnesty under a new administration. And now, 4 years after walking free, he'd kill again. Same method, same river, same neighborhood that had lived in fear of him for nearly 3 decades. The shepherd Jose Inez Rodriguez testified. The Solorio sisters testified. This time, there would be witnesses. This time, there would be justice. But it had taken 28 years and at least 21 dead women to reach that point. To understand how Mexico City's first known serial killer operated for nearly 3 decades, you have to understand the Mexico he lived in, the women he targeted, the police who failed to stop him, and the justice system that let him slip through its fingers, not once, but twice. This is the story of Francisco Guerrero Perez, El Chalequero. But more importantly, it's the story of the women whose names history barely bothered to record. Hello, friend. Welcome to Foul Play.
Born in 1840 in Baguio region of Mexico to a working-class family, Guerrero Perez's early life was marked by hardship and instability. Growing up in the impoverished neighborhoods of the capital, he witnessed the stark social inequalities that characterized Mexican society during the Porfiriato era. Guerrero Perez was the 11th child in the family. He suffered abuse from his mother, who would beat and suffocate him from an early age. His father was absent from the home and the family were extremely poor. As a child, Guerrero Perez displayed troubling signs that would foreshadow his future crimes. Neighbours reported seeing him torture small animals, and he was known for his sudden outbursts of rage. Despite these warning signs, the limited understanding of criminal psychology at the time meant that his behaviour went largely unchecked. His family, struggling to make ends meet, had neither the resources nor the knowledge to address his growing psychological issues. In 1862, at the age of 22, Guerrero Perez spread his wings, left the family home and moved to Mexico City, where he trained as a shoemaker. He settled in the neighbourhood of Peril Vilo, married a lady called Maria and had four children with her. He was a devout Christian who wore beautiful, elegant clothing, from his cashmere trousers to a charro vest and jacket, to the multicoloured sashes that adorned him. Despite claiming to be a religious man, he was quarrelsome, misogynistic, and allegedly had numerous affairs that led to multiple children. Some thought he may actually have been a pimp due to his behaviour. He would happily tell anyone that would listen his beliefs, didn't care knew about his affairs, would have violent outbursts, and thought he was untouchable. Yet many described him as eloquent and charming. There were definitely signs that he was a narcissist from a very early age.
The year was 1880. Porfirio Diaz had seized the Mexican presidency 4 years earlier in a coup, beginning what would become the Porfiriato, a 35-year dictatorship marked by rapid industrialization, brutal suppression of dissent, in a widening chasm between rich and poor. Mexico City was transforming. Electric streetlights were being installed on the Paseo de la Reforma, where wealthy families promenaded in imported European fashions. Grand buildings rose in the city center. French architecture, Italian marble, German engineering. The elite spoke of progress, modernization, Mexico's arrival as a civilized nation. But in the working-class neighborhoods along the Consolado River, in Tepito, La Merced, Peralvillo, nothing was changing except the body count. Women weren't disappearing. They were being hunted. And when they were found, they were always near the river. The Consolado River wasn't really a river anymore. More like an open sewer cutting through the poorest districts of Mexico City. The water ran brown and thick, carrying waste, industrial runoff, textile factory chemicals, and the detritus of urban poverty. In summer, the smell carried 3 blocks, human waste mixed with chemical dyes and rotting garbage. In winter, the fog of the water hung heavy with disease. The neighborhoods along its bank were densely packed with tenements, wooden structures leaning against each other, laundry hanging between buildings, 50 people sharing outdoor privies. The markets stayed open past dark because working families couldn't shop during daylight hours. The pulquerias, the bars where working men drank fermented agave pulque, lined every corner, their doorways spilling yellow lamplight onto dirt streets. Women worked. That's what women did in these neighborhoods. They worked as lavanderas, washerwomen, spending 10 hours kneeling by the river, scrubbing other people's clothes. They sold food in the markets, chilies, corn, tamales, from before dawn until the evening crowds thinned. They labored in the textile factories that had sprung up during the Porfiriato's industrial boom, breathing cotton dust 12 hours a day. These women walked alone, had to, early morning to the market before sunrise, late evening home from work after dark. Nobody thought twice about a woman walking through the streets of her own neighborhood. Nobody thought twice about a woman carrying her day's earnings home through unlit streets. Nobody thought twice until the bodies started appearing. The first body was found in 1880 near the Consulado River. A woman, mid-30s probably, strangled with her own rebozo, the shawl working women wore. No identification. No one came forward to claim her. The police made cursory notes and moved on. Just another dead prostitute. Another nameless casualty of urban poverty. Another body appeared a few months later. Same location, same method, same lack of urgency from authorities. Then another. The pattern was forming, but nobody was connecting it. Nobody was tracking it. These were poor women from working-class neighborhoods. Sex workers, market vendors, factory workers, washerwomen. The kind of women Mexico City's police force, focused on protecting Porfirian elites and suppressing political dissent, didn't particularly care about. The kind of women whose deaths didn't warrant extensive investigation. The kind of women whose murders got two lines in a logbook and then forgotten. By 1880, approximately 20 bodies had been recovered from or near the Consulado River. 8 years of murder. 8 years of women found with their own clothing used as murder weapons. 8 years of the same neighborhoods, the same victim profile, the same modus operandi. All women. All from the same working class districts. All strangled. All disposed of like garbage near the river. And nothing was changing except the body count.
Between 1887 and 1888, he claimed the lives of at least 20 women, though some historical accounts suggest the true number could be significantly higher. Mexico City found itself in the grip of terror, as bodies were discovered with alarming frequency in the city's poorest neighborhoods. The murders followed a distinct pattern that revealed Guerrero Perez's evolving mythology. He would typically strike in the early evening hours, approaching women who were walking alone in the vicinity of markets or on their way home from work. Using his disarming charm and well-maintained appearance, he would strike up conversations, often offering employment or assistance. The victims, often sex workers, usually from impoverished backgrounds, saw little reason to distrust a well-dressed craftsman. The locations of his crimes created a macabre map across Mexico City's working-class districts. The neighborhoods of Tepito, La Merced, and Santa Ana became hunting grounds where women feared to walk alone. Nearly every victim bore the same terrible signature, strangulation marks from their own clothing, particularly their rebosa. Though sometimes he would slit their throat and occasionally he would decapitate them. He would then skin his victims using a knife and use the skin in his trade as a shoemaker, throwing the body into the Consulado River. What made these crimes particularly chilling was Guerrero Perez's habit of returning to the crime scene days later. Witnesses reported seeing a well-dressed man in a vest standing near locations where bodies had been discovered, observing the aftermath of his handiwork. This brazen behaviour spoke to his confidence in avoiding capture and complete lack of remorse. The fear that gripped Mexico City during this period was unprecedented. Women began travelling in groups, and markets that usually stayed open until dusk started closing earlier. Local newspapers filled their pages with gruesome details of the murders, creating a climate of panic. The working-class neighbourhoods, already struggling with poverty and crime, now faced an invisible predator who could strike at any moment. Guerrero Perez's reign of terror exposed the deep social divides in Mexican society. The authorities' initial sluggish response to the murders of poor women highlighted the class prejudices of this time.
Let me tell you who they were. Mercia Gallardo was a market vendor in La Merced. She sold produce, chilies, tomatoes, fresh corn, squash, from the same corner stall she'd operated for over a decade. Third row from the central fountain. Her customers knew her voice calling out prices before dawn. Knew to arrive early for the best chilies, still dewy from the farms outside the city. She was 47 years old, had 3 children, 6 grandchildren. Her daughter worked a stall 2 rows over, selling herbs and dried beans. On the evening she died, Mercia had just finished packing up her unsold produce. She was walking home along her usual route, the same path she'd walked for years, the same streets she knew like the lines of her own hands. Francisco Guerrero Perez approached her, offered to help carry her baskets. She'd seen him before. Everyone in the market district knew El Chalequero. Well-dressed, respectable-looking. Why would she refuse help? He led her away from the main street, away from the gas lamps and evening foot traffic, away from where anyone might intervene. And then he strangled her with her own rebozo. The dark blue shawl with red embroidery she wore every day, the one her mother had woven for her. He pulled it tight around her throat until she stopped moving, left her body near the Consolado River, with the rebozo still knotted around her neck. Mercia Gallardo, 47 years old, mother, grandmother, market vendor for over a decade. Her murder would be the one Francisco Guerrero Perez was eventually convicted of. The only one of his crimes that made it to trial with enough evidence to secure a conviction. Not because she was his only victim, but because she was the only one that authorities bothered to properly investigate. Then there was Emilia. Not Amelia, Emilia. The court records are clear, even if later retellings got her name wrong. Emilia was a lavandera, a washerwoman. She worked alongside the Consolado River every day, except Sunday, washing clothes for wealthier families who lived blocks away from the smell of the water. 10 hours kneeling on the stone embankment, her hands raw from lye soap, her back aching from the constant bending. She was paid by the piece, 3 centavos for a shirt, 5 for trousers, 8 for a full dress. She had to wash 40 pieces a day just to afford rent and food. On the evening of her attack in early 1888, Francisco Guerrero Perez approached her as she was wringing out the last load. The sun was setting. Most of the other lavanderas had already left. He was charming, well-dressed in his vest and good trousers, offered to walk her home because it was getting dark and a woman shouldn't be alone by the river after sunset. She accepted. Why wouldn't she? He looked respectable, spoke politely, seemed concerned for her safety. He led her away from the main path, away from the few people still out, away from help. And then he raped her, strangled her with her own clothing, left her unconscious near the river, her face in the mud, blood from her torn clothing mixed with the brown water. But Emilia survived. When she recovered enough to speak, when the bruises around her throat had faded enough that she could get words out, Emilia identified Francisco Guerrero Perez, described him in perfect detail. The elegant vest, the charming smile, the gentle voice that had turned cold. She told the police exactly what he'd done, every terrible detail. Her testimony would become crucial evidence, one of the few survivor accounts that existed, one of the few voices that couldn't be silenced. The police didn't rush to arrest him. They'd heard stories, knew the neighborhood rumors, knew that bodies kept appearing near the Consolado River, and that people whispered El Chalequero's name. But Emilia was a washerwoman, poor, worked in the river mud for centavos. Her word against a well-dressed craftsman who owned his own shop and had been operating openly in that neighborhood for years. Who would believe a washerwoman? It wasn't until other witnesses started coming forward, people who'd seen him with victims before they disappeared, people who'd noticed him standing near crime scenes watching, people who'd been too afraid to speak until someone else spoke first, that the police finally had to act. Then there was Lorenza Urrutia. Lorenza was a sex worker in the Peralvillo neighborhood. She worked the streets near the railroad tracks, the area where factory workers and day laborers passed through after shifts, where a woman could earn enough in an evening to pay rent for the week. In 1908, after Guerrero Perez's final arrest, she came forward with her story. Years earlier, she couldn't remember the exact date. Maybe 1905, maybe 1906. She'd met him near the tracks. He'd approached her, asked if she had a light for his cigarette. Polite, well-dressed. When she came close to help, he'd pulled a knife. Small blade, sharp, forced her to accompany him to a secluded area behind the warehouses. Raped her there. Tried to strangle her with his hands when he finished. But Lorenza fought back. Screamed, clawed at his face, kicked hard enough that he loosened his grip. Someone heard. A night watchman, maybe, or another worker. Guerrero Perez fled into the darkness, leaving Lorenza gasping on the ground with his finger marks bruised into her throat. Lorenza survived. But like Emilia, she hadn't reported it at the time. Who would believe a prostitute accusing a well-dressed craftsman? Who would investigate? Who would care? By 1908, when she finally felt safe enough to testify, those questions had answers. But for years, for the years when it might have mattered, when other women might have been saved, they hadn't. And then there's Antonia, the elderly woman murdered on June 13, 1908, the one that shepherd Jose Inez Rodriguez saw, the one whose death the Solorio sisters witnessed in its aftermath, the one whose murder finally brought forward witnesses who weren't too afraid to testify. We don't know Antonia's last name. We don't know how old she was exactly. We don't know if she had family, where she lived, what she did for work, whether she had children waiting for her to come home that evening. What we know is she died violently near the Consolado River, that her throat was slit by a man who'd been killing women for 28 years, that she was just walking, just existing in her own neighborhood, when Francisco Guerrero Perez decided she didn't deserve to live, that her death was what finally brought him to justice. 28 years too late for her. 28 years too late for at least 20 other women. Mircea Emilia Lorenza Antonia, and approximately 17 other women whose names we'll never know. Women who were mothers, daughters, sisters, grandmothers. Women who worked brutal hours for substance wages. Women who walked to and from work in the dark because they had no choice. Women whose murders were barely investigated because the authorities considered their lives disposable. Women whose bodies were found and forgotten. Women whose families were told nothing. Women whose deaths didn't matter enough to warrant anything beyond cursory police notes. That's what Francisco Guerra Perez counted on. That's what allowed him to kill for nearly 3 decades. Not just his own cruelty, but the systemic indifference that decided certain lives weren't worth protecting. The institutional failure that decided poor women's deaths weren't worth investigating. The social structure that decided working-class women were expendable. He counted on that. And for 28 years, he was right.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For 8 years, bodies had appeared near the Consolado River. 20 women, maybe more. Everyone in those working-class neighborhoods knew who was responsible. Everyone whispered his name. But fear kept them silent. Until February 1888, when the evidence became impossible to ignore.
Guerrero Perez was arrested on the 13th of February, 1888. The arrest itself was surprisingly anticlimactic. Officers located Guerrero Perez at his workshop, where he was calmly working on a leather vest. He offered no resistance and maintained an unsettling composure as he was taken into custody. When searched, he was found carrying personal items belonging to recent victims, providing immediate evidence of his guilt. At this point, an important witness came forward. Amelia, a washerwoman, who recognised Guerrero Perez and said that she had been raped by him near the Consulado River and then left for dead. Amelia's testimony matched the scattered descriptions gathered over the previous months and confirmed that they had the right man. During his initial interrogation, Guerrero Perez's behaviour shocked even hardened investigators. He spoke about his crimes with a disturbed detachment, providing details that only the killer could have known. His arrest brought immense relief to Mexico City's terrorized communities, though the ease with which he had evaded capture for so long exposed serious flaws in the city's law enforcement system. The subsequent trial of Francisco Guerrero Perez became one of the most sensational legal proceedings in 19th century Mexico. The courtroom was consistently packed with spectators, journalists, and families of victims, all eager to witness justice being served. Guerrero Perez maintained an eerily calm demeanour throughout the proceedings, often appearing more interested in the technical aspects of the trial than his own fate. The prosecution presented overwhelming evidence, including testimonies from survivors, witnesses who had seen him with victims before their disappearances, and the numerous personal effects of murdered women found in his possession. Perhaps most damning was Guerrero Perez's own detailed confession, which he never retracted. His apparent lack of remorse deeply disturbed both the jury and the public. The trial exposed significant shortcomings in Mexico's criminal justice system. The absence of standardized investigative procedures had allowed Guerrero Perez to continue his killing spree far longer than necessary. This realization led to calls for reform, particularly in how evidence was collected and shared between precincts. After a relatively brief deliberation, the jury found Guerrero Perez guilty of the murder of Mercia Gallardo and the assault of Amelia. The other murders could not be proved. The judge sentenced him to death, but this was later converted to 20 years imprisonment.
The trial revealed something authorities had known for years, but never acted upon. Francisco Guerrero Perez had been killing women since 1880. 28 years of murders. At least 21 dead women that we know of. Likely more whose bodies were never found, or whose deaths had never been connected to him. And the response from Mexico City's justice system? They convicted him of one murder. One woman, Mercia Gallardo, the market vendor whose body had been found near the Consolado River, with her own rebozo still knotted around her neck. Not because Mercia was the only one he'd killed, but because Mercia was the only one for whom they'd maintained enough evidence to secure a conviction. The only one they'd bothered to properly investigate. The only one whose death seemed to matter enough to warrant a complete trial. The trial transcripts reveal Guerrero Perez showed no remorse, described his victims as worthless women who deserved what happened to them, claimed he'd done society a service by removing prostitutes and poor women from the streets. The same attitude that allowed him to operate for decades, the belief that certain lives simply didn't matter. He expressed openly in court, no shame, no regret, just cold contempt for the women he'd murdered in the working class neighborhoods he'd terrorized. His defense argued diminished capacity, claimed childhood abuse had damaged his mind, pointed to his age, 68 years old now, as a mitigating factor, suggested he wasn't fully responsible for his actions because of his difficult upbringing and psychological issues. But the prosecution had survivors, had witnesses, had physical evidence, had 28 years of bodies found near the same river, had testimony from Amelia and Lorenza, had the shepherd's account of Antonia's murder, had the Salerio sisters describing him washing blood from his hands. The verdict was guilty. The sentence was death by hanging. Then, once again, bureaucratic indifference, presidential clemency, political pressure. The sentence was commuted to 20 years imprisonment in the Belém prison. No execution, no justice for 21 dead women. Just another prison term for a man who'd already been released from prison through bureaucratic incompetence once before.
Guerrero Perez became known as a model prisoner, working in the prison's leather workshop and maintaining the same polite, measured behavior that had previously allowed him to avoid suspicion. Fellow inmates reported that he never spoke of his crimes, but would occasionally share detailed observations about the prison's security weaknesses. Guerrero Perez was pardoned and released in 1904, but it wasn't long before he was back to his old ways.
The pardon wasn't mercy. It was another bureaucratic error. After serving 16 years of his 20-year sentence, Francisco Guerrero Perez's file was mistakenly placed with political prisoners, receiving amnesty under a new administration. Someone confused paperwork, filed the wrong documents, mixed up a serial killer with political dissidents. And just like that, he walked free. 4 years passed. 4 years of El Chale Guerrero living in the same Paravalo neighborhood where he'd hunted before. 4 years of neighbors recognizing him, knowing what he was, but having no legal grounds to report a man who'd served his modified sentence. 4 years of working class women walking the same streets where he'd killed before, knowing he was there but having no protection. June 13, 1908, 20 years after his first conviction, 4 years after his release, Francisco Guerrero Perez killed again. The elderly woman named Antonia, the one from our opening, the one the shepherd Jose Ines Rodriguez witnessed being murdered. Same river, same method, same neighborhood that had lived in fear of him for nearly 3 decades. But this time, there were witnesses who weren't too afraid to testify. This time, the Solorio sisters saw him washing blood from his body. This time, a shepherd saw the actual murder happen. This time, authorities couldn't ignore it. This time, they arrested him within days. His second trial was brief. The evidence was overwhelming. Eyewitnesses, physical evidence, his own lack of denial. He was convicted, sentenced to death, again. But Francisco Guerrero Perez never faced the executioner. In November 1910, the same month the Mexican Revolution began, the same month Porfirio Diaz's regime started collapsing, Guerrero Perez died in Hospital Juarez in Mexico City. He was 70 years old. The cause of death is listed variously as brain embolism, tuberculosis, typhoid. Accounts differ, records are unclear. What's clear is this: he died in a hospital bed, not at the end of a rope. He died while awaiting execution for one murder when he'd committed at least 21. He died before final justice could be served for Antonia. He died while Amelia and Lorenza and the other survivors were still alive, still carrying what he'd done to them. There's a story that gets told about Francisco Guerrero Perez, about El Chalequero. It goes like this. His case was a watershed moment in Mexican criminal justice. His arrest led to reforms in police procedures. His crimes prompted the creation of Mexican's first specialized homicide units. His trial changed how evidence was collected and documented. The horrors of his murders forced Mexico City to confront its failures and build better systems to protect vulnerable women. It's a comforting story, a story where something good came from something terrible, where the murders of 21 women led to systemic change that would protect future victims, where their death at least meant something. It's also not true. The historical record doesn't support the claim that Guerrero Perez's case prompted specific criminal justice reforms. The changes that did come to Mexican law enforcement in the early 20th century, and there were some, came from broader forces, from the Mexican Revolution that began 5 months after his death, from the collapse of the Porfirieto, and the slow, painful construction of new institutions, from decades of activists and reformers pushing for change, from political upheaval that transformed everything about how Mexico was governed. Not from one serial killer's arrests, not from 21 murdered women, not from 3 decades of systemic failure finally being exposed. The truth is less comforting, but more important to acknowledge. The truth is that the women Francisco Guerrero Perez murdered failed by every system that should have protected them. Failed by police who didn't think poor women's deaths were worth investigating thoroughly, who made cursory reports and moved on, who knew the pattern was there, same neighborhood, same victim profile, same method year after year, and did nothing, who waited until a well-dressed craftsman was literally seen murdering someone by multiple witnesses before taking action. Failed by a justice system that convicted him of only one murder when the evidence suggested at least 20. That released him through bureaucratic incompetence after his first conviction. That commuted his death sentence after the second conviction, sending him to prison where he died of natural causes less than 2 years later. Failed by a prison system that confused him with political prisoners and released him early, putting him back on the streets to kill again. Failed by a society that considered working-class women's lives inherently less valuable than others, that decided market vendors and washerwomen and sex workers weren't worth protecting, that allowed neighborhoods full of vulnerable women to become hunting grounds because the victims weren't important enough. That systemic failure is Guillermo Perez's real legacy. Not reforms, not changes, not lessons learned, but the stark, uncomfortable reminder of what happens when society decides certain people don't matter enough to protect. The neighborhoods along the Consolado River in 1880s Mexico City were full of women who had no choice but to be vulnerable. Women working brutal hours for substance wages. Women walking to and from work in darkness because they couldn't afford transportation and their jobs didn't match daylight hours. Women who couldn't hire security or pay for safe housing. Women who existed in the spaces the Porfierto forgot. The tenements, the markets, the riverside washing stones. While electric streetlights were being installed blocks away for the wealthy. And when those women started dying, when their bodies appeared near the river year after year, the response from authorities was minimal. Cursory reports, no real investigation, no coordination between precincts, no urgency, no outrage, just bureaucratic notation that another nameless woman had been found dead in a poor neighborhood, another casualty of urban poverty that didn't warrant resources or attention. It wasn't until survivors came forward, until Amelia testified, until Lorenza testified, until witnesses felt safe enough to speak, until someone with enough social standing was murdered in front of witnesses, until the evidence became so overwhelming it couldn't be ignored. And even then, Guillermo Perez was only convicted of one murder. And even then, he was released after 16 years through bureaucratic failure. And even then, when he killed again, it took 28 years total before he died in prison of natural causes. Mircea Gallardo, who sold chilies in La Merced Market, had 6 grandchildren. Emilia, who washed clothes in the Consolado River for 3 centavos apiece. Lorenza Arrudia, who survived and testified. Antonia, whose last name we don't know, and approximately 17 other women whose names history never bothered to record. They deserved protection. They deserved investigation. They deserved justice. What they got was a system that considered their lives disposable. That legacy, that failure, is what we need to remember about El Chalequiero. Not reform myths, not comforting narratives about lessons learned, but the honest truth about what happens when certain lives are deemed not worth protecting, when bureaucratic indifference meets systemic contempt for the poor. When 3 decades of murders in the same neighborhood, targeting the same type of victim, barely register as worth investigating. That's the legacy. That's what deserves to be remembered. Until next time, remember, when a system decides certain lives don't matter enough to protect. It's not just failing the victims. It's revealing what it truly values. Thanks for listening, friend.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.